Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Morelia Python Radio, brought to you by Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapythons.com, the best carpet python Morelia forum on the web. Tonight, Owen can't be with us, but we have a special co-host, guest, fill-in host, Mr. Zach Baez. He is joining us. Zach, you there?
Yes, sir. What is up, man?
How you doing? Much. Pretty good. Pretty exciting day for you today. What happened?
Oh, man. I'm still coming down from the high, man, let me tell you. Whew. It was awesome. I didn't get anything done, let me tell you, because I was just glued to the front of my cage all day from 11 o'clock, I don't know, to probably like 5 o'clock. I was glued in front of this cage. Finally, after 28 days of waiting, my coastal finally dropped their eggs. So my first ever carpet breeding is to do some eggs, man, and I was super excited, crazy excited. I could barely breathe. My hands were shaking. I could barely hold the camera while I was taking photos. Oh, man, I was psyched. I was super psyched. You know, because you've been waiting, you know, I've been waiting, I don't know, maybe, you know, you get these babies and you grow them up and you feel like it's going to take you forever. 3 years later, finally she's old enough. Finally you have a male that you think is suitable enough. Finally you put them together. Then you don't get locks for the first 4 months they're together. Then you start feeding them. All of a sudden you get locks and you keep your fingers crossed and hoping that something's going to happen. You think you see an ovulation, you're not really sure, and then she sheds, but you really still don't believe you're going to get eggs. And then finally you start to see the lumps in her that she looks like she, you know, ate golf balls, and then finally you think, okay, yeah, there's eggs in there. And, you know, today finally it happened. It was awesome.
So you get the applause button for today. It's not. I don't know what's wrong with the music, though. Everything seems kind of low, but... Okay. Anyway, that's awesome. That's you're done now. It's finished for you. You know that, right?
Dude, it was finished 3 years ago, man. I've been on this quest for 3 years, and finally, you know, I've been seeing my fruits and my labor. And she's wrapped them up real tight. She's actually, I just got back from your place, actually.
Right.
And she is so tight on these eggs, man. You can't even see one of them. I mean, it's a small clutch.
Right.
It was eight fertile. Those two, slugs in there, which I was kind of like, killed me. But
right.
I forget who I was telling, but I'm glad that kind of happened because, you know, I didn't want my head to swell too big, thinking I didn't get any slugs. I did everything right. And so now I know, okay, all right, there's room for improvement. You know what I mean? It's like, all right, those two slugs, that tells me that I did a good job, but I could do better, and there's a lot more I would change for next year. So I know that going in now. So I'm just glad I was able to salvage something out of this year and get her going. I still got my other girl. I'm waiting on her, and I'm thinking she's going to lay sooner in that 21 to 28 days. I think she's going to be more like 21, 22 because she is huge. She was way further along than my coastal did when she laid. So, and she's supposed to be 10 days later. Yeah, but that jungle, she is huge. Oh, did I say jungle? Oh, man. Bad.
Oh, no.
Bad, my dark side cred. What's happening? That's no good.
You're
oh, man.
Now. We're trying to keep that secret. I got the, you were over here, you saw the female caramel bred to the zebra jag. We can actually feel the eggs in her. She's days away, maybe even hours away from laying for some triple combos, triple codoms.
Oh, yeah.
So, looking forward to that. I will let everybody know, Zach gets me thinking when he comes over here. And, you know, I keep these girls, they're in 41-quart tubs because, you know, my girls are a little bit on the smaller side. And,
right.
You know, I'm looking, and the previous year when I did maternal incubation, I was worried about, you know, what to use as a medium for them to incubate their eggs in. So Jason Balin, I know he uses paper, but I think the way I had the paper, I don't know if I had it shredded up fine enough. I sort of hand ripped it rather than like run it through a shredder or something like that.
Right,
I got some mold on the one clutch, which kind of worried me. So when we were talking, you had mentioned to use sphagnum moss and put that in there. So what I basically did is put it in the whole tub. So it just became like a big, huge lay box. And it seems to be working pretty good. So if you have those smaller females that you're keeping in tubs, I would recommend that to you because they seem to really be liking it.
Man, that stuff is great. And it's naturally antibacterial, antifungal, anti-mold. That stuff is great because it's sort of, it's acidic. It's a very acidic substrate. Bacteria and stuff has a hard time really, breaking it down. That's why people use it for dart frog vivariums, and people use it for orchid, for planted orchids and stuff, anything that requires a high humidity, because it doesn't break down because it's so high in acidity. So that's what's good for things like that, because it's going to help decrease the chances of mold, mildew, and fungus. So, yeah, I love the stuff, man. As soon as I put it in there, my girls' lay boxes, they were going nuts for it, digging around in it, pushing it around. So, yeah. And
cool.
They seem to, when I saw your girls, they seem to really like it. They were digging tunnels in it and everything.
Yeah, they're not as spoiled as they are over at your place. We're looking to change that all over here. So, I thought it was a good tip, and I'm always up for learning. So we'll see how it goes. I really I'll always have that handy for my carpet breeding here. I'm sorry, Chris Behoff is messaging
Uh-oh.
Me as we speak.
What's he saying?
Anyway.
What's Behoff saying? Come on, it can't be anything good.
Oh no, he heard you were on. He's wondering about the jungles.
I cannot deny I'm having the jungle clutches here. I don't want to admit it, but that's what's happening.
So, tonight, before we get it, we have Michael Pinnell joining us, and we're going to be talking about selective breeding. And these are kind of the steps that you want to take before, as you can see how excited Zach is about having his first clutch. I remember last year when I was having my first clutch. And he's going maternal incubation, by the way, which is awesome.
Yes, yes, maternal, yes.
Yes.
Listen, first of all, I don't even know how people can take those eggs away from those girls, man. I would never be able to do it. I would feel like such an asshole. Who does that? I can never take it away from them. I was like, they worked all that hard for you to just rip them out, rip them off of those eggs and just take them away. Like, come on, man. Let them have it. They'll do a better job than you'll ever think of doing. And I'm a believer. And she wrapped them up real good, so I know she's going to do great. And I'm not even worried about it, really. Not even worried about it at all.
I wouldn't worry either. It's so easy. It's, it's just stupid that more people don't do it. But, hey, to each their own. Some people like the control, you know what I mean? They like to know that they're in control. But I think the mom, she knows best, and she's more in control than I think we could ever be. But, anyway, I was saying we were talking about selective breeding. And, when I first got into carpet pythons, any time that I ever heard of selective breeding or specific carpets, one guy's name always popped up. And M. Penn, which is Michael Pinnell, who's joining us tonight. And he talks about, we're going to talk about selective breeding, some of the things that tips, maybe his thoughts on how we can do a better job in selective breeding for traits, because he gave me the inspiration to selectively breed for the underdogs of the carpet python world. And he's done an amazing job so far, he continues to refine his lines, because you can look at his IJs or his coastals and know immediately that that's where they're from. And I think he's kind of the guy that inspired me way back. I know I probably told this story before, but back in 2009, I was tracking down, getting into coastals, and I had emailed Michael about he had some striped animals that he had for sale up on his webpage. And he said, you know, I was really looking for, like, this female. He said somebody else had already emailed him about it. He's waiting to hear back if it was definite. And it turned out that it was, and I was kind of bummed out. And, you know, I was, oh, man. Well, it turns out that the person who bought them actually ended up selling them to me later on down the line. So, basically,
there you go.
The trio that I wanted, he raised them up. And then sold them to me. So I was really happy to have them in my collection, because I think out of all of my coastals, they're definitely my favorite. They have like a lavender hue to them, the striping. You know, you've seen them, Zach, and when you've taken the pictures of them to try to get that gray and lavender. And sometimes I've even seen them where they're super reduced, and oh man, it's just beautiful, awesome. So,
phenomenal.
So, I figured when we were talking about selective breeding, what better guy to talk about it than Mike? So, I guess if there's not anything else, the only other thing I'm going to throw out there real quick before we bring Mike on is we have three things. We have the Carpet Fest. We're weeks away from the Carpet Fest. I mean, we're looking at basically 3 weeks away from the Carpet Fest on May 18th. It's going to be in Maryland, Waldorf, Maryland. You can check out www.carpetfest.com. You can go over on the Facebook page, Northeast Carpet Fest, and follow all the cool stuff that we have for the auction. Rough scale pythons from Bushmaster. That's pretty cool. Zebra Jag for me. What else do we have? I'm trying to think of all the cool animals that we have. But anyway, everything that we raise in the auction that we're doing is going to help Rico, going directly to Rico, and to help him out, because what a great guy Rico Walder is. And I know, Zach, you'll probably appreciate him more now that you're a Condro guy more than ever, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe we should touch on this. Everybody's been giving me a lot of flack, man. What's up with that? Everybody's been giving me a lot of flack. How dare you? How could you do it? Were you nuts? You're crazy. Eric is not fair. How can you take that snake away from you? Hey, listen. Molly's in a better place. She's going to be doing a lot of good breeding. She's going to be getting in with V soon. And you know what? That's good stuff, because I think it's going to be some great things coming out of there. Not only that, hey, man, I've been inkling for a Condro, and I fell in love with yours when I was photographing her, and now she's in my place. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
So, honestly, I feel like I got a better deal, although I did see her today. I saw Molly today, and I got to tell you, she was doing better at your place than she did at mine. What's up with that? I don't know what that's about, but she is awesome.
Carpet heaven haven over here, you know what I mean?
is that what it is? She's just like, you know, I'm gonna look my best now that I'm over here with the best. Is that what is going on?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Not the best. They don't live in the best. You know, what was that joke I said before? Owen has all this fancy gauging and it's like A-plus stability.
The tub she was in, she had two hives on either side. She had a water ball. She had perches. She had all this. She had a plant in there and everything. And now she's sitting on newspaper with a water ball.
Oh, no. Don't worry.
But hey,
you love...
No hate. You know what I mean? She's doing good. I saw her. You fed her, so that's good. We're going to the right direction there. We're going in the right direction, Eric. You fed her, that's good. Hopefully we can get her up to size. Because I think there's no reason why she can't breed in 2.5 years old. I mean, she's ready to go. She's rocking it.
Oh, yeah. And that's going to be the Johnny Blaze clutch of the coastal world. So keep your eyes.
Everybody's going to keep an eye on. Oh, yeah. Everybody's going to have their eyes peeled.
So the other thing I wanted to hit on was the symposium, the ICAS.
Oh, yes.
Yes, that's coming up August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. We're a little ways away from that. However, you can go over to their webpage. It's arboreal symposium.com, and you can sign up. There's going to be some great speakers there. Tons of Moralia, Bolins, rough scales, Chondro Heaven, probably. I mean,
Chondro.
It's going to be insane.
Oh,
so.
My God, Chondro. I'm telling you, I'm going to have to go get a credit card. I have to go sell my car. I'm just going to have to hitchhike down there and use all my money and buy some Chondros. That's what's going to happen. I'm going to leave there broke. I think we all are going to leave there really, really broke. Because
yeah.
You're going to throw alcohol into the mix? Come on, I don't know. I think they planned this to sell some snakes. What do you think?
Could be.
Oh, yeah.
Morelia Python Radio, we're proud to be sponsors with the ICAS, and we're going to be doing some interviews, live interviews at the show, and talking to some of the breeders there, and hopefully get to meet. And I finally get to meet Nick Mutton. I can't wait for that. Can't wait to hear his talk. I'm looking forward to that, and it should be a good time.
That's going to be cool.
Yep. So let's get Michael on here without any further ado. Hey, Michael, welcome to back.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
How you doing, Mike?
Well, first of all, I need to tell you congratulations on your first coastal clutch. I think it's pretty cool that you actually got to see them being laid. Mine have never dropped today. I've actually had to go out in the early wee hours of the morning to be able to catch them. So the fact that you were able to catch them during the day, I think is really cool. So congrats on that.
Yeah. Thank you. That was all her, man. I was just watching.
I hear you.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So, he's done now. It's done for him. He cannot turn around.
Well, since you put it that way, I was listening when you said that he was done. I would say, no, now he's actually just beginning. And comes, you know, which is his future road? What does he want to do with the offspring? Does he want to, you know, sell all the offspring and use the same pair? Does he want to selectively breed for certain traits that he finds in the clutch for future generations? You know, that type of thing. So this is just the tip of the iceberg now. Now he really dove into it.
Yeah, you bring up selective breeding, and that's kind of what we wanted to hit on, along with what you have going on over there at Pythons in a Pear Tree. So when you hear the term selectively breeding, what does that mean to you? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, basically, for me, it's about breeding for specific traits. I mean, when you're dealing with a morph, you already know what you're breeding for. You're breeding for that morph. When you're breeding an animal such as carpets are, just in general, they're so variable, coastals, IJs, jungles, you breed for specific traits. And for me, that would be either striping or to accentuate the stripe, to accentuate banding for a really highly banded animal, or even for accentuating for color. You know, if this one has a really nice color that I like and I have a pair or a trio, or this one matches, you know, its uncle or something, and selectively breed for certain traits, it produces some killer animals down the line.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you think it's easier to selectively breed for pattern or color? Are you trying to get the pattern in place first, or which is more important to you?
Actually, for me, it's about an equal color and pattern. But my belief is pattern is easier than color. Sometimes if you have an animal that already has a good pattern and the color, the extra color or breeding for that color comes through. And the main thing, basically, I was blessed with the animals I have, you know, to be able to produce from those and accentuate further and selective breed off those animals. The thing that I think most people need to look for when they go to buy them, it's not like there's a, you know, $150 coastal at this table and this dude has one for $50. Typical, $50, I can get a carpet. Well, there's a reason they're price graded different, and I even do that on most of mine. I price grade them because if they have different colors, different pattern that will, as they grow and mature, will produce a nicer, cleaner animal than some of the other ones. And, you know, even with my caramels right now, you know, I know there's a big race for caramel stripes. I'm actually going the flip side and trying to do banded caramels in addition to caramels. I have a really nice animal that I produced that's got some really, really nice bands, and so I'm wanting to breed it in the caramels because right now the caramels, something about the pattern and stuff with the caramels fights the stripe really heavily. Nick's produced quite a few nice animals, and it seems like you either get a kind of nice stripe, but it's not, it almost looks like a normal coastal because it's fought the color so bad. And you wind up with the same thing with the exanthic gene.
Yeah, that was, you know, it's funny. Owen has the same thing where he has really nice striped, what he, you know, he's calling them caramel tigers, but they're really nice striped caramels, but they don't have that, they're not as exaggerated with the caramels that the parents that he bred are, you know. So, interesting.
And I think a lot with the caramels. I mean, I produced my first clutch in 2011 on the caramels, and I produced one really nice stellar female. So automatically, she became future holdback for future breeder. And some of the other ones, you can tell they're caramels, and some of them, as they're maturing, it's like you got to sit there and kind of look at them and compare them to a normal coastal to really see the difference. And with that, I think that a lot of it's fighting with the colors that's in the MPN line of coastals with the lavenders and, you know, I've even heard this hue that you tend to see on them. That it, that caramel color is so heavy that it's really, for essence, jacketing up, making them kind of look like really ugly caramels. But caramels are just really relatively being introduced to the market. So to produce really nice caramels and select a breed for caramels, it's still down the road. I mean, I like to use this as an example, and that's kind of the reason I started selectively breeding coastals and IJs. Anybody's been in the hobby for a little while or has been on Morelia pythons and seen some of the stuff when jungles were really hitting the market, late 80s, going into the 90s, and you look and see what those jungles are, and now you see the Behoff Johnny Blaze. I mean, that's the one that springs to mind, but there's a lot of really nice classic jungles that have this, you know, deep black, velvet black, vibrant yellow. They didn't look like that 20-plus years ago. People selectively bred their jungle carpets to get where they are now. So normally when people think of carpet pythons, they think, ooh, jungle carpet, because they remember black and yellow. Well, I'd had some jungles, and I had wound up selling them off. Many years ago, and I wanted to focus on my coastals and IJs and selectively breed those to bring out more color, more pattern, and just because they were the underdogs of the world, and it's been paying off, and there's still a lot more to do with them.
I agree with that 100%. There's a lot more to do with them.
Because I heard you're a fellow dark sider. So,
listen. You don't get darker than this over here. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is like pitch black hole dark side all the way. Even though I have a clutch of jungles coming, but it still doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm a dark sider.
You got jungles over there.
Yeah.
I said you say that, but you got jungles over there.
Yeah,
that's right.
I know. It's terrible. I know. I'm kind of hypocritical.
I know.
Yeah, they'll be gone too.
But I mean, really, to be in any kind of really carpet enthusiast, you have all of them. I just recently got back into jungles. I picked up a female zebra from Nick, and I'm going to probably get some of his Tully Locale and Palmerston Locale and some of that other stuff. I'm strapped on space. So, and then with, you know, just about every clutch I produce, there winds up being one or two animals that I think I'm going to keep this for a future, you know, future breeder. You know, this, I like the traits this one has or the color this one has, so then I wind up, you know, holding them back. So I've got so much of that I don't have room for too many other new projects.
Yeah, I hear that. How long are you, you know, with carpets, with the variability that they have, you know, are you able to pick your whole backs right out of the egg, or are you holding them back for a while? What's your process?
Well, with coastals in general, coastals sometimes you can get them like right out of the egg. Sometimes their color, just there's something about the color, or especially with stripes. I mean, it's automatically, you know, you just see it. Oh, wow, this is a really cool stripe. And then you kind of wait to see, you know, you already tentatively mark on the tub, you know, hold back. You wait to see how it progresses. But with the coastals, you know, normally by the first, second shed, you can really start to see kind of what the possibility for the color is. And I guess it's harder to look back. I mean, say like in Zach's instance, just starting out, it's hard to really see what they look like because you look at those babies and they're kind of like brown worms. And when you see them as an adult, a whole different look. So really knowing where and when, what to pick out and what to clue into, it's sometimes really just in the eye of the beholder. You know, what is it you want? It doesn't really matter what Nick wants or what, you know, you want or Owen wants. What do I want to produce? You know, if I like it, chances are somebody else is going to like it.
Right.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You're the one cleaning up the snake poop. You're the one feeding. You're the one taking care of all of it. What do you want to look at? You know, so what do you want to accentuate? He might get something really wicked where on this coastal clutch they have X's down their back. Well, man, I hadn't really seen this, but I think I want to work on this and then hold something back that looks similar and then start selectively breeding for that type of a trait. And over a little bit of time, you're going to start to get animals like that. And I think a lot of that is where that tiger gene plays in. Because I remember when it was once thought to be codon, then it was thought to be simple recessive, and it looks like it's more of just a line bred trait, a phenotypic trait.
Right. Now, do you think that you're going to be able to, like with your coastals, your line of coastals, do you think that eventually you'll be able to bring that lavender out more and more? Is that something you're after? Or?
Yeah, I think it is possible. I kind of really wish that coastals had like that granite gene, like the IJs have. But I've really seen how some of those granites are really starting to color up when you do them with a kind of, I mean, you've been around long enough to see how Yoss are. I mean, everybody knows Poster Child. Everybody knows Herman. Everybody knows Mocha. There was a lot of stuff in the way he selectively bred his IJs to get animals, even before the granite came in, that pop some lavender, pop some purples, you know, on an IJ, which was kind of unheard of. Nobody really saw them. It was just like, okay, this starts as a red snake and then becomes a brown snake. And now that there's more of the selective breeding, you can start to see these different things pop out. But as far as the coastals, yeah, I can see more of it coming down. It seems like every year or every other year, I produce one that is, like, better than the previous year. And so that winds up becoming the new holdback or next future breeder. And they color more. Some have more reduced pattern. I've got some that I've sold. Actually, that trio that you wound up getting a hold of, you know, if I'd been able to hold on and had an extra, I don't know, 100 cages, you probably wouldn't have them.
You're probably right.
I mean, honestly, they're that clean.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And if you remember, you've been at homes, Nicky got one from me many years back, and he took a good picture of it, and people swearing up and down it was Jay.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that, yeah.
He said, no, just breeding in coastals. And even, you know, breeding my Jaguar in, you can see a lot of difference in that Jaguar and how clean that female stays or that male stays as it matures. They have a really nice kind of that more, what Benjamin was with the more of a white, ivory white look color to it. That's the way my female stayed is. And she was a daughter of my O2 Lemke line, the stripe that everybody sees.
Okay. Is that where your stock traces back to? Is that the founding stock, is the Lemke line?
Yeah, they originally came from VPI, and talking with Nick, we had kind of done some tracing back, and they came from, I believe, an Amy Zirkle, and before that was tracked back to Lloyd Lemke. And, you know, anybody that's known Lemke for a while or known, he had a way of getting stuff. And had these coasters for a little while, and I'm not sure he actually bred any of them before they wound up getting to Dave and Tracy. But as far back, that's, you know, we could trace it to him. So they're called Lemke. I always refer to them as Lemke line, but I think they're more affectionately called the M-Pen line.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
The younger cats on the scene now don't know Lemke. You know, they don't know some of the older, you know, guys that came in before us.
Nope. Now, have you taken that? I'm sorry, Zach, go ahead.
No, you're right. I always knew them as M-Pen. I mean, even when I started to get in 3 years ago, you know, M-Pens, I saw that all over the place, never knew what it was. M-Pen, what is that? Yeah, I don't know what that is. Like, what is that supposed to represent? I don't, you know, I knew they had a certain look, and I know what that look is. But I didn't know where they're from. You're right. A lot of us newer guys don't know those older names and those guys beforehand. So, I agree with that.
It's not necessarily a bad thing, but always okay. Nice to know where you came from. You know, where did somebody handle come from? And a lot of these guys that actually did the hard work. You go to especially Kluber's, and they had a hard time. They would just try to keep them alive, much less breed them. So, you know, once guys find out that they had to cool them, they had to brumate them, they had to do this, and kind of unlock the secret. And now most people take it for granted. Oh, that, you know, you just know that's what you're supposed to do it now. 40 years ago, they didn't. So, you know, kind of knowing where the history was and looking over the time, you see where this hobby's going and how it's progressed. You go to snake shows, you're not seeing just, you know, long-haired hippies like me or, you know, tattooed and pierced up. I mean, there's doctors, there's lawyers, there's city councilmen, even though they probably don't want to admit it. But, you know, I mean, there's any number of people that you run into that we all have that common thread. We all like reptiles,
right.
Whether it's lizards, whatever. And I think that's where we need to kind of stick together, and when it comes up on this legislation, to fight for that, no matter if we're a retic guy or a carpet guy, whatever, we're all reptile people. And I think we're new stuff trying to ban with, you know, the other exotics when it comes to, you know, the large mammals and stuff. Most of those guys already know there's certain requirements they're supposed to meet to be able to keep what they keep. But I think we do need to, you know, probably fight with them in the same aspect, you know, so that we're able to keep what we want to keep. The carpets are some of the best, larger snake you can have that's tame, cool, impressive, starting to come in a different color of variety, pattern. This triple that you're about to hit is going to be some really nice-looking animals.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping so.
Oh, yeah.
We have a caller on the line here. Hold on. Let me click them on. Maybe they have a question. Hold on one sec.
All right.
Caller with the 623 area code. You have a question for Michael?
Oh, God. I'm just listening in.
Oh, okay.
Not a problem.
I'll put you back on hold. All right. Very good.
What you were saying, you know, learning about people that came before. It's kind of funny you said that because when I was doing the lineage, I'm you know, got really into lineage now. I'm trying to track down every one of my animals going back to grandparents at the least, trying to get even further than that. And when I was doing the lineage for Molly, you know, Erkenu snake, you know, finding out that her great grandfather was Benjamin and her great grandmother was Madame Blueberry, and finding out where they came from and finding their, you know, tracking all that back was just amazing to see. And it's fun to see it all on a pedigree and see how all the little traits, all the little things that you know, that we take for granted, but how they all trickle down and you know, come down to this one animal, and how all those animals had an effect to create this one animal. And it's really cool to see. So, yeah, I think that's I've gotten a more appreciation for stuff like that. I know a lot of other people are starting to do a lot more of that, which I think is really important. And, you know, I agree with you. It's really cool to see what people did and how that's affecting what we're doing with our animals now, you know. So.
And I've been seeing a lot with the pedigree stuff now. I actually need to kind of give me some software and start doing it on mine. And I think it's cool that you're doing that because you can look back, you know, Madam Blueberry, you can look at Benjamin, and you start to see, then you kind of know what to expect for her offspring. You
right,
know
yes.
what kind of tape to kind of do. Because you've seen, you know, there's a picture of Madam Blueberry. And actually, I think that's where I fall short, is I need to name mine so everybody knows mine. Particular, you know, not the limpy striped
yep.
female. You know, everybody knows Benjamin. Everybody knows Madam Blueberry. I mean, anybody that's in the Coastals knows that. Anybody that's in IJs knows Herman, Mocha, Poster Child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just know, so you already knew what the, you know, it's like saying George Washington was your great-great-great-great-grandfather. Everybody knows who he was.
Right.
So it's
yep.
that same type of thing. And getting, because I know you're in the dark side, the IJs are
right.
a little here as far as selective breeding. Because they start as red, you have no idea what they're going with white. Those you tend
right.
to hold to for at least 6 months. In general, once they start feeding and feeding regular, they change quick. If it's a poor feeder, it stays red for a little while. Sometimes you can tell when they're young the contrast of colors. Is there
mm-hmm.
a great contrast? Or is it kind of a dull contrast? You know what I'm saying? Is it like a white and a red? Or is it like a creamy pinkish color and a light-colored red?
Right,
you know,
right.
you'll see there's a great contrast. And in that contrast, we'll start to show as it matures. Now, as it gets about
okay.
6 to 7 months, you know, okay, that's not what I was looking for. No harm. You've raised it for 6 to 7 months, you can still sell it. But
right.
That those are a little trickier to know what to start looking for.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a bunch of questions about your, you know, your IJ line and you know their origins and everything. I have two sisters from Eric, you know, that came from Door, you know, his M-Pen IJ, and I was just kind of curious of where did that line start. Where were the animals obtained from, that sort of thing, and really what was the goal of your breeding? Did you have a specific idea in mind what you wanted to create? Because I know when I look at, you know, an M-Pen IJ, I see it. I see your work that you put into it. But I kind of wanted to know what was your specific reason for doing those things and where are you hoping that it will go in the future is what I'm asking.
Okay. First answer is they came from Dave and Tracy Barker. I'm not
right.
sure exactly how many they imported when they first started importing the New Guinea or West Papuan pythons, IJ pythons. Depends on what political you're looking for. And then I got them from a friend of mine that had acquired them from them directly. So they are of VPI origin. When I actually first started breeding, my first breeding was just to breed IJs. You know, you get that little notch on your belt. Hey, I bred milk snakes, and I bred this, and I bred, you know, coastal carpets. And you get that little notch. It's like right now, you've got a notch on your belt. I bred coastals now. Now comes that next step. What do you want to do with them? Mine was just starting. I produced. Cool. I sell the babies. Then as I kind of started going into it, you know, you want to have more than just a pair or a trio. And I think my first real breedings were in probably like 99 or 2000. But the first time I actually got to the point of eggs actually hatching, I did maternal incubation, was 2002. It was a coastal carpet female and a Borneo blood python. First two that I ever hatched out because I'd had problems with incubators back and forth. So it was just the fact of getting those. And it was probably about 2006 when I decided to start selectively breeding for specific traits. And this was when the Jags were really starting to kind of come in. Everybody was still much like they are today. No offense to Mr. Behoff, but everybody was jungle crazy. And, you know, both were just kind of on the back burner because it was the Jag and that was it. There really wasn't the Xanthogen yet. The Tiger was kind of a flip-flop. There was a controversy of whether it's a jungle, whether it's a coastal, whether it was, you know, whatever. IJs were just IJs. There was no granite. There was no anything else. It was just, oh, yeah, there's this other carpet from over here. And, you know, I kind of like working with the underdog type stuff. And I'd already started to get a name for myself from those animals. And it just seemed like the most common sense thing to do was, you know, to continue focusing with those and, you know, go into selectively breeding those. And it seemed to work and pay off. It's like he said, I'd go on a forum today and somebody would post a picture. Even when he'd acquired that trio from the guy in Louisiana and he posted the pictures without saying anything else, I knew they were mine. There's a look that knows they're mine. The eyes that he's sometimes a picture, but I can still post them.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, there you are, Mike. We must have lost you for a second.
Okay. So did I answer all your questions, Zach?
Yeah, so essentially you were breeding for just better, so just higher contrast, more color, a pattern you kind of were going for. Is that the general idea? You're just trying to make just better IJs overall, or was it you wanted more orange, or was it you wanted more white instead of the beige? Was there a kind of an idea of that, or you were just trying to get the best ones you can out of what you had?
I'm going to say probably it was contrast, and see this is where this door for yourself or for somebody else. You produce animals that tend to have a lot of orange, pull them back and selectively breed for that color. You know, somebody might have some with a more white, some with more lavender. And then you actually have kind of distinctive lines. Even though these are all IJs and they're still pure IJs, they're going to have a distinctive look. And that's why I can tell when it's my coastal. Because it has a distinctive look. And so there's still plenty to be done with selective breeding. And even with some of the new morphs popping up, even with the crossing of the different species, you know, doing the zebra-jag caramel, what you get right off the bat, but selectively breeding for a specific color or traits in those, 10 years from now, won't look like what you produce.
Yeah, you know, I was gonna talk to you about that too. What's your thought on, you know, a lot of people when they're breeding morphs, this is more so than just a straight carpets or any snake for that matter. They never. It seems that people often forget about the other snake. You know, you're breeding a jag, caramel, tiger, whatever. Well, probably not a tiger. But it seems like to me that they'll just go and breed a jag to whatever coastal they can find, and then, you know, they produce so jags. Then there's other people that go and they'll take the jag and they'll breed it to a really, really nice, you know, coastal, and then get stellar results. And I think that's what people have to think about, specifically with that clutch, the zebra jag and the caramel. I have three caramel, and out of the three of them, she was the one that had the most yellow. So I figured if I'm mixing it with the jag and the zebra jungle, that if I really want those caramel to pop and be bright and have a nicer look to them, my thought was that you would go and breed it to the caramel that has the most yellow, and hopefully it will make better caramel zebra jags, you know, or better zebra jags for that.
Yeah, I can see that, and like you said, picking for the yellow that you saw in one of them and how they'll work with a jag, sometimes it's a crapshoot. You don't really know what it's going to look like until you produce. And you might find out, okay, the yellow color just didn't quite do it for the jag like I was thinking. Maybe I should have been formal with it. And you'll know what to do in the next year. But the thing with, I think, with the morph is generally, and this has been going, whether it's ball pythons, carpets, kings, corns, whatever. People buy a morph, I'm going to get rich, make a bunch of money, quit my regular job. We all want to do that, but it just doesn't happen. You know, I'm going to breed a zebra to about 5 different jungle females if I get a bunch of zebra. But what did the jungle females look like? You know, what are your zebras going to look like? People are doing it just because, oh, I can make money, I can do this, I can do that, without really looking at the long-term goal at all. They're looking short-term. You know, and there's nothing wrong with making some money. Hey, I got a zebra myself, so I'm going to try to do it. But, you know, zebras are still relatively new. So what's it going to do when you have a zebra that at 2 years or 4 years old is as bright as Johnny Blaze? Right now, I haven't seen a zebra look like that yet. But with some selective breeding, the zebras will look like that. So any crossing in with the jags or the caramels or whatever, it will make a difference. It just, it may not be showing in F2 or F3. It may be F4 before you start to really see something that really pops.
Right. Hmm.
You still there, Eric?
Yeah, I think we lost Eric.
Okay, I was wondering, because it was getting all kind of shaky and stuttery there for a little bit, and I was like,
Yeah, I don't know. I think then he dropped off. I mean, we could continue probably on the conversation. He's not that important, no. let's see. What else I wanted to hit on? So what projects you got coming up this year? I mean, is in terms of what pairings you got going on, and do you have any clutches on the ground now?
Well, I have a few. It looks like this year is kind of the train wreck. Every once in a while, you'll have them years. Now that you started, you'll find, you know, you were talking about the two slugs you had. I did a caramel jag to my, you know, limpy line and pin line jag, very clean jag. And I wound up with like 17 slugs and 4 eggs. So
do you have any predictions or what that, or any hypothesis of how that happened at all? Or
sometimes it's the male. In this instance, I'm to say it's the male. He was probably still on the small side, I probably should have waited another year. But at the same time, I bred males that size and had a great clutch. So sometimes it's just the way it is in the car. Sometimes it just wasn't meant for you that year. You know, maybe your temperatures were, I mean, we can try to get our temperatures a certain way, give them enough space to roam around, food and everything, and then it just wasn't right for them, or at least not that year. You know, I mean, last year, this female dropped like, I want to say she dropped 19 to 21 eggs, all perfect, no slugs, no anything. But I'd bred her to a different. This year I tried to do the caramel jag, bred him to a caramel, and bred him to this particular jag. And like I said, I got a lot of slugs. So I could put it off on the male. Right. It's possible, but then it could have been something I didn't quite do right. I mean, you know, they've got all these El Ninos and whatever else. The outside temperature, even though you can try to control your temperature, your environment, the best of your ability, it still fluctuates a little bit. When it rains outside, they know it. There's a drop in barometric pressure, and they sense it. And sometimes it just wasn't right when you were putting the male in there to breed. She just wasn't as receptive. And so, you know, even though you saw a copulation, and I actually never saw a copulation in this pair, Normally I do, but I never caught copulation in this pair. So I know we had to have because I've got eggs.
Right.
So, you know, I did a head-to-head Granite IJs this year. Wind up with like 11
cool.
eggs. And I think I'm down to 5. Some of them started dying off during incubation, which happens. They all looked perfect when they went in. But, you know, for one reason or another, just wasn't meant to happen. So, you know, you can't get mad and sell everything off, which is
infection
cells. So, you know, this is what to expect getting into it. You know,
yeah.
At least first time you did get slugs, so you know, hey, it could be worse. Could have been all slugs.
Oh, yep.
You know,
yep. Believe me, I was hearing about people slugging out, and I was just hoping and praying that that was not going to happen to me. So, I'm counting my blessings for sure. That's definitely true.
It just depends, and I mean, I've seen a trend too where. You know, there might be a particular year that nobody really had. A lot of their, you know, females slugged out. And so it might be somebody, me here in Texas, Nick in Washington, somebody in Nebraska, you know, somebody in Florida. So there's other elements in play besides, oh, well, my male just wasn't doing it. You know, if too many other people are slugging out or just not having it, there were just other things in play that's beyond our knowing. So you just... Thank God for what you got, and, you know, just try again next year. I mean, that's the snake breeder's motto. There's always next year, you know.
Right, yeah.
Make sure they're well fed and ready to roll.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's him calling back in.
Yep.
But so you have the coastal pair. You have...
Mm-hmm.
One pair of jungles.
All right.
Right. And what do you got for your IJs?
Oh, IJs. This year I went kind of IJ female buying up crazy, at least for what I can do here. I got two sisters from Eric, from his M-Pen to his, what the heck, I have it here, hold on, getting confused, his M-Pen to his GQ Outcross, and then also have, who else, I have the patch to Kafka Clutch, I got a female from that, I got a Heck Granite from Nick, and then I got an F3 female, striped IJ. She has a wicked, wicked, like full dorsal stripe all the way down. And I got her from somebody who had a couple, you know, F2 IJs kicking around, and he just put them together, and I popped all these really nice stripes. And she was the only female in the clutch, so I nabbed her as soon as I saw her. She was phenomenal. And I just got her today, and she looks really, really good. So I'm hoping to get this year, I'm hoping to pick up a striped IJ from Bo Cabana, a male, and so I can have a pair of those and try to refine that stripe a bit and see if I can bring that out. Because I love tigers. I love tiger coastals, but now that just because of space and time and just, you know, how big the collection I'm comfortable having, I kind of am transitioning a lot of my collection, so... I've really kind of really going almost 100% IJ. So a lot of my stuff is moving out, and I'm moving a lot of new IJs in. But I always love tigers. I mean, I had some really great tigers from Jason here, and I love them to death. And so if I could get that pattern with an IJ color and look and size and temperament and all that, that would do it for me. That would be the perfect snake. So, that's my hope.
You're selectively breeding, and you're known. This is Zach Stripes. I haven't
That's
seen
right.
enough the IJ Tigers to really know if you breed one to the other, if the whole clutch is like that or not.
Right,
I know
right.
stripes that I do on my coastals are independent of the tiger. Mine, I can almost predict what I'm going to get in the clutch as far as stripes, depending on what my parents were. It's almost
gotcha.
Like mine passes in a recessive nature, but not quite. Whereas with the tigers, it's kind of like a crapshoot from what I've seen. So it'd be interesting to see IJ tiger, which is supposedly strictly IJ, no coastal or anything else mixed in, how that plays out. And if you have that other stripe IJ, and see, that's the thing with carpets in general. They have so much variability that you can have banding. You can have stripes. I mean, I've produced some IJs that have a pretty decent stripe, but not anywhere near the tiger stripe. So being able to get that and accentuate that and hold back animals in future breeding F2, F3, you could get some really killer looking animals. And then I may have to be buying stuff from you.
Yeah, there you go. That does
with the granite. Now that might be interesting, just how that granite pattern affects a stripe.
Yeah.
Huh. Mm. So
that's the idea.
Sounds like
you
had a pretty, I'm glad to see is that somebody that's starting out is actually doing the research. And like you said, you're looking at the pedigrees, doing the research, kind of seeing. I've seen way too often where somebody picks up something from a pet store or a jobber at a reptile show, and, they want to post it on the forum. Well, what is this? The best we can do is an educated guess. Yeah, I can see coastal and I can see jungle, I can see whatever. But, if you got five people say they think it's coastal, and this individual talks up, it's a coastal, and they try to sell it off as a coastal or find a coastal to breed with. And it makes it harder to sell those offspring. Now, there's a group of people that don't care. If you want just a carpet, you can get a carpet. But generally, and I've got friends that have done, they've bought one, and then once they got to hanging with me and seeing my animals and, I guess, hearing my spiel about them, then it's like, man, I really don't have any. I don't know exactly what this is. Because it was a first snake, they wanted to keep it anyway. But they don't really ever plan on breeding it because if I want IJs, I'm going to get some IJs so I know they're IJs. Or I'm going to get something I know it's coastals. And there's nothing wrong with the cross morphs. Like I said, that zebra caramel jack is going to be a clean-looking animal. That's not my thing.
Nope, me neither, sir. that's not my thing.
Problem. I've seen, what Paul Harris has done and what Ollie's been doing. And, Eric's got some killer stuff over there. So he's trying to produce some nice animals.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a market for it. It's the same thing, in like you said about pedigree, I'm really like to see that because if you go into certain green trees, there's pedigree traced back over 30 years.
Back to the 70s. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on a lot of those. So being able to... All of a sudden now, people want to do that with carpets or, their IJs and whatever. That's going to be really cool. And I've got to get in there and try to do some more stuff with my pictures because I had my hard drive crash last year, and I lost, all of my pictures.
Yeah.
And I've got old hard drive from an older computer that I might be able to pull at least what my original adults were as far as pictures goes. And I'm going to have to see if I can get a friend that can see if he can access any information off that other hard drive. Because, I even lost both my daughter's first day of school pictures. They're all gone. Everything I had in there. So, I'm going to get the pictures and back it up on an external. It's nowhere connected here. So I would suggest that to anybody listening to you that when you get your pedigree and you do this stuff up, save it on a hard drive, flash drive, something that's not on your computer.
Right.
Because I've got people asking me now, I want to get pedigree. I've actually got to try to get some pictures for Nick. And there's a lot of pictures I don't have because I've lost them. Because when that hard drive crashed, it took everything.
Right.
Technology's cool in some aspects, and the other aspects, crap. Because you never think I'll end up on 35 millimeter film because I got digital. I put it on the computer, it's good.
Yep.
So they don't even have the old, you know, any pictures because it was all on the hard drive.
Yeah.
So
hard copies are important, yeah.
That way you always have.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what you want. Yeah. My hope is to, as I finish each of the pedigrees, that's Eric now. He just texted me saying, I can't talk, but I can hear. So I don't know what's going on with him, but hopefully he'll be able to fix it and get back on. But, you know, with the pedigree stuff is a lot of work. I mean, it is a lot of work. There's no doubt. But I'm glad that I'm starting it now because hopefully that'll help me in the future. But I can see how people who have, you know, hundreds of snakes trying to build a pedigree for each one of them is going to be a problem. Yeah, I guess I think it was a lot of the Chondro people influence that, you know, and Eric's big on lineage too. Just, you know, having that influence, talking to other friends that are really into lineage and chondros and things, and I kind of pulled from that. And I was like, well, you know what? I plan to have a smaller collection. And so, you know, that's another thing I could give my customers. Like, I could give you the full rundown. I could tell you what his great-grandfather was and his mother and everything. And so you'll have all of that. And, you know, hopefully that helps in sales and hopefully that helps in just customer service in general. And that'll maybe hopefully put me, you know, ahead a little bit, you know, give me something. Because I can't have 100 animals. I'm in a small little apartment, you know. I can't have that much, you know. So just taking the animals I have, being really selective about the animals I'm buying and just, you know, go with that and put all the effort I can into what I have. And hopefully I come out, you know, better in the end. We'll see.
That's really cool. And I think the best thing about this pedigree is you can go back. And so if it's a coastal – with a pedigree, you could pretty well say, yeah, it's a coastal. I know it's a coastal. I have this pedigree on it, you know. And generally,
right.
It still goes back to, do you believe the breeder? And so when it comes, do you trust the person you bought it from? And there's a lot of these shady guys at snake shows. I see them in all the ones I go to that just got these snakes, and they can't tell you nothing about them, where they came from. They mislabel them. I was one show I went to was a striped Brettles. And actually, Sean Christian was at the same show, and they had it marked as a striped coastal.
Ugh.
And I like Sean, come here, look at this. He's like, yeah. He said, look down at mine. Striped Reynolds, same thing. I'm like, yep. So we did convince the guy. He had it labeled wrong. But a lot of them will refuse to listen to you.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
With you having your pedigree and having the animals you have, when you set up and you're able to sell, it could be similar to mine. I mean, I have people come in and look at them, well, it might be a little pricier than somebody else. So I said, well, look around this show, and I guarantee you, you'll come right back to this table.
Yep.
Look at the coastals or IPAs that are in this room, and I guarantee you'll come right back over here. And they do. Now, they probably still don't buy sometimes, but they can't help but deny those are better looking coastals, IPAs, or whatever. And what you see on another
thing. Yep.
And with where you're going with the striping, I think that's going to be really cool. Because there's stripes. I mean, the coastal stripe, that's why people like tigers. And Jason has got the best, hands down, tiger collection, period. The red tigers he produces.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to just go walk around and see his facility and see what kind of, you know, what stuff he's not taking pictures of. I've got stuff I haven't taken pictures of yet either. That, man, all my holdbacks that people have seen, I've got other stuff that's like, wow, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm hyped.
Yep. Yeah, I know. Yeah, he has some incredible snakes. I don't know what happened to Eric. I have no idea. I don't know if he's going to come back, or he's not going to come back, or have to run the show for the rest of it, or I have no idea. He had the list of questions, so bear with me, please, because I'm trying to catch up here and figure out what questions he wanted to ask exactly. Let's see. I'm wondering if I could call him on my phone and do a three-way. That may be possible. Can you give me 1 second?
Yeah, yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, there he is.
Yeah. I don't know what is going on. I apologize, but there's something wrong with the connection between me and Blog Talk. I swear, whenever we have like a show that I'm really excited about, it seems like Blog Talk screws me. But you guys kind of go in and out. I finally got my phone to click on. I'm going to mute this mic because it keeps having problems, and I'll just be on my phone. So give me 1 second.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, we were having a good conversation.
There we go. Okay, good. I can't wait to listen back to it.
Yeah. We were talking about all kinds of stuff, man. You missed it.
We were talking about you, too, since you weren't there to say anything.
You probably talked all about IJs, right?
Pretty much.
Damn.
So you can, like, you know about.
Actually, Eric, I'm sitting here with a notebook, and I'm pulling one of Eric's tips. I have my notebook here and my pencil, and I'm writing like crazy, let me tell you. So, Mike is full of all kind of good knowledge.
I don't know where you guys left off or what you were doing, but I know the last question I was asking before I got cut off was the selective breeding with the other snake. I get. Did you guys hit on that? I'm assuming you guys did, right?
A little bit. I think we're, yeah. Like, say somebody takes a zebra and they're breeding it to, like, five different jungles, you know, what kind of zebras are you going to get? You might get some nice ones. You might get some ugly ones. And it's all about the selective breeding. You know, what's it going to take when you start seeing zebras that look like Johnny Blaze? Since that's the popular one right now, I'm going to keep using him. You know,
right.
Saying the black and the yellow. It's still there. It's just too many people want to go, oh, I get a zebra, I produce zebras, make the money, run to the next project. Make
right.
a super zebra. Run it, without taking that extra step and going a step further, and then how can I refine this? Well, how can I make it better?
Right.
You know, we've all got to the point where we're breeding them already, so we already know that, you know. Do I want to go ahead and try to make this better? Do I want to try to get a striped animal? You know, that's why this race is on for the caramel stripe.
Right.
Several people trying to work on it.
Including myself.
I don't know.
I haven't much luck, though.
Nick will probably beat me to it. But then again, I'll probably beat him to some other stuff. So, you know, we'll see.
Right. I think you were hitting on it earlier. I think when I was talking to Nick before, he was saying that there's a similar problem with the Exanix because it seems that they are heavily banded.
Mm-hmm.
And looks like that as well. It's going to be difficult.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and that's the thing when it comes to morphs is what we see on the outside is, we'll just say like the Jag, okay? We see reduced pattern. We see this wide black, a wide dorsal stripe, you know, head pattern, great-looking snake. What's going on underneath? Does it have an enlarged heart? Is there problems with the liver? We don't know what else is tied in. I mean, now with the Jag, we know that there's a neurological disorder of some sort, you know. But with something like the Exanthid, you know, we see this, but what's lying underneath? So there's competing forces with that strong banded pattern. When you're trying to produce that morph to another morph, you're having competing forces that you don't really visually see as underneath, you know, at the cellular level, that maybe through selective breeding can enhance one way or the other. You know, at least with that expression, I think you will be able to, but it may be F3, F4, F5.
Right.
I mean, I would say four then, but, you know, you're talking about something that's really heavily banded and it is really strongly influenced by the bands.
Right. You bring up before the show, Zach was over here and we were watching a show about dog breeding. And it brings up a good point. Like when you're selectively breeding, are you picking other animals from, you know, to keep the I mean, because the inbreeding to a minimum, is that something that is a priority with your projects, or have you not noticed that it matters as much in snakes?
I haven't noticed as much. I think when I kind of started into it, I mean, Yasser had already been doing it quite a bit with his IJs, and I think he caught a little bit of slack for it. I don't really remember how much, but you can't deny what the animals look like.
Right.
That you can do to an extent, but yes, I'm trying to outcross so that it's not just inbred, you know, 5-6 generations. You know, you're going to wind up with a snake that maybe, you know, no pattern, but it corkscrews worse than a Nero J, you know, or it has no muscle tone, or it doesn't survive past 1 year of age and then just dies because of inbreeding depression. So, yeah, you might do some, but if you can start with a larger base, say like Zach and I were talking about his stripe IJs, if he were actually to have another set of animals, or at least another male or female with striping, that gives you another, you know, offspring off one clutch can breed back to the other female or male, or take offspring out of two different clutches and be able to
breed them together,
with that, so that you don't have, even if they're brother sisters, you're not breeding back to, you know, a brother and sister, and you get offspring and breed those brothers and sisters. You know what I'm saying? And then further down the line, we're back. You actually can kind of go out. And then if you can get an animal from an unrelated line to cross in, that's best. And a lot of my red coastal line was, I kept a lot of offspring back from that. It was bred to the MPN, and I sold some of the offspring off, and I've kept some of the reds to breed red coastals that are separate from my Brisbanes. So should have some nice reds next year.
Brisbanes, you bring up a sweet spot in my heart for those. How are they to work with? I mean, they got to be amazing because just in picture alone, I'm blown away by them.
Yeah, I'm really bad. I need to get some pictures of mine. Really bad. They're cool. They're adult size. Well, mine are not quite there, but they're going to be. They're the largest as far as kind of locality coastal. They're the largest. You know, I think records of females are like 14 foot. I don't really know if we're going to have snakes that big, but, you know, your animals from the southern range tend to grow really large. And Brisbane being from that range is known for that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting when we get, and with any luck, I think Nick and I will both be having Brisbanes next year.
Now, do you think that that's going to be something that you're going to breed into, like a caramel or something like that? Or are you going to keep that going, just the Brisbane locality, and try to refine that a little better just on its own?
With the Brisbane locality, we'll probably try to keep it as a locality. Same thing with my Rockhampton. With the reds, it's just a general generic. I'm going to, you know, if I find a really nice red, maybe from, say, Jason Bailey or Sean Christian, because he's got some nice red coastals, that I can cross in with those and then, you know, selectively breed into that trait, I might. The caramels, you know, all the caramels got Rockhampton blood in them, so they don't grow near as large as, say, your MPN coastals or even Nick's line.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so they're not going to get as large. So, and I see a lot with even the caramels just producing. I'm really hoping to try to produce a super caramel, but if I can produce more caramels that look even better than the mother, then I've reached my goal.
Right.
And then my next step is, can I produce something that looks better than those? You know, at some point in time, I think it will kind of be, you hit the bottom. It's not going to look any better than this. But I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime. In my eighth generation or something, you know. But if you're constantly adding a new blood in, I don't think you can ever really bottom out on it, because you're going to constantly be adding new blood, so you're going to have other traits that are added to it. So say with what I've got with my M-Pen line, I go and add one of Nick's animals and plug it in. And at first generation, I'm probably not going to have much of what I was looking for. There might be some, okay, now that I've got the new blood in, I need to hold back this female or that male or whatever, and then put those back into, you know, my M-Pen or breed back to the animal I got from Nick or something like that, depending on what I'm trying to produce, what look I'm trying to go after, you know, whether it's color, whether it's pattern. So I don't think you will ever really bottom out to a point where, okay, I'm done. It's just not going to get any better than this.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. When I don't know if you guys hit on this when I was off in Never Never Land, but when you when you're where you're at now with your coastals and your IJs, is that where you envisioned them to be years ago?
No. Not
no?
even in my wild team. Yeah, I
better?
I didn't be able to produce, yeah,
yeah, they...
much
better. Okay,
I didn't
cool.
expect it to be as clean and, you know, I guess kind of a reduced in pattern in the green hues. I mean, to me, that's a huge compliment to be able to go on a forum or whatever and look and, like, that's my carpet. I produced that because I can tell, you know. So with that first breeding I did, you know, on the maternal incubation back in 2002, to see that I would be able to know if somebody posted a picture on any kind of forum that that snake was produced by me, yeah, it gets them a lot further along than I would have ever imagined.
You know, and that's one of the things that I say. I often use you as an example, Mike, that jungles have gotten most of the love through selective breeding and all the attention, and rightfully so. I mean, like I said, they stand out at a, when you're vending a show, they're going to grab people's attention. That yellow and black, that contrast is, you know, it's hard to beat. However, nobody has really focused the time except for yourself, maybe Jason Balin, Nick Mutton, a couple other guys, but it, just as the carpet community in general, I don't see as much of attention put into seeing where the limitations or where you can take the coastal, the IJ, and now even the inland is brought into it, or the Brettle. I mean, you know, Brettles, you know, the red carpet is just crazy, and to think that nobody's really, I mean, Nick is really the only guy that I can think of off the top of my head that's really, like, taking it to another level, you know? And I, you know, and I, like I said, I understand why, but I'm kind of like you. I give love to the underdog. I've always been that kind of way, and I think that you're going to see more guys like myself and Zach and paying attention to, you know, the IJs and the coastals, and in a couple of years, people are going to be like, what? That's a what?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even have a morph into it. You know what I mean? It's just that you're going to be able to look at it and say, wow, look at that. That's really crazy looking, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of it is at, because, you know, right now it's still a morph craze and everything. And I think what I'm seeing basically in a lot of the community is who's going to make the first, I don't know, 97.2% something jags.
Right.
You know, I mean, what point does it just become mute? It's still going to be a cross of whatever it is. You know, there's no denying it. And I'm not knocking them. I mean, Brian Hummel and I are really good friends, and he's produced some similar, you know, 88% jungle jags, stuff like that. But, you know, where does that point stop? You know, do you keep trying and trying and trying? What do you do with the extra offspring that aren't jags?
Yeah, we've brought up that topic many a times on the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can say a super form, like in the ball pythons, and everything's going to be a jag. you have these extra offspring, you know, and especially crossing into brittles, you know, you've got, and Lord forbid they start doing inlands. I know they already had tried once in Europe, but I know it's eventually coming here. And so I think at some point in time, and I would say mark my words, but I've been wrong before, it's going to tend to be like, and I think you're starting to see part of it with the pedigree, it's going to be like the dog community. Mutts were great, but when you have an animal that's pedigreed and it's a pure animal, it's going to wind up holding more than any morph ever was.
Yep.
So if I can get a tool and I've got a pedigree four generations back, you know, I'm going to be able to pull a lot more than a jag. Even just a nice coastal jag, you can, I think Behoff had mentioned it the other day, there are people probably paying as high as $400 to $450 for a very clean jungle, which is more than any jag goes for, outside of, you know, 95% jags.
Right, right.
You know, it's going to come to that point that everybody's going, they're wanting back to, you know, this pure line. This is what it looks like, even though it's not necessarily what it looked like in nature, because we can't just go and go to Australia, pick a jungle carpet up, bring it home, and breed it. It's still remnant of the ancestors are there. It's just been a refined line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I have some crazy morphs over here, and some, I plan on doing some crazy crosses, but, you know, most of the time, Zach can attest to this, when he comes to my snake room, we spend the majority of the time looking at my IJs, you know?
Too much time, yep.
You know, so, I mean, to me, the beauty is even in just the plain carpet python, whether it's a coastal, inland, you know, a jungle, or, you know, an IJ, whatever it is, you know, I think that you're absolutely right that there's going to come a point where people are wanting those lines, and that's when guys like yourself, hopefully myself, Zach, Nick, all those kind of guys that have those lines and those pedigrees and such are going to be able to have, you know, have that to offer people. Because it's a shame that it would get lost, you know. I think you were saying earlier about the Brisbanes, and, you know, I have a pair of Palmersons from Nick, the Palmerston Jungles. Mm-hmm. And I don't plan – I have striped jungles, and I have a striped jungle project. But I don't plan on crossing them into that, because I think what makes the Palmersons cool is the fact that it's a locality jungle. Why would I breed it to something else? To me, it loses its coolness at that point, you know?
Yeah,
or what makes that project a project, yeah. Go ahead.
Where it gets to it is, I know I've seen it with Cape York spotted. Somebody will get a Central Coast, just a normal spotted, breed to a Cape York, and sell all the offspring as Cape Yorks. You know, so if I bred, you got a jungle from, you know, Joe Blow off Craigslist, and you bred it 20 Palmerstons and then turn around and sell them as all Palmerston jungles, then you just dirtied the blood pool, you know, or the gene pool with it, and false advertising. So you've really got to do the research on who you buy your animals from. And I'm not saying,
correct.
I mean, I've known you for a while, Eric, so, I mean, you're good. Zach, I don't know.
We'll check. Hey, Mike, we'll change that. Don't worry about that. We'll get to know each other. Don't worry.
I got you. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, you've been in it a little bit, Eric, to see. You've been on the forum. You've seen how the stuff gets, you know. Got a jungle. He has a coastal, and we're going to breed him. Okay, now what are you going to do with the offspring? Granted, there's still going to be people that buy them, but not as many. You know,
yeah,
there was a local guy right here in town, young kid that was coming up. He was wanting to do ball retics and, you know, burn balls and all that other stuff, because he'd see there were like $5,000 on the internet. And I said, look, I know the guy that did the first car bomb and the carpal, and I guarantee you, they didn't make all that money selling them. Now, they may have sold one or two. I'm not sure on Todd with the carpel, but the vast majority of that stuff got traded for other things. It may not have gone for as high as it is. I said, you might get $300-$400 for something like that. So, but, I mean, he was all set and determined. He was going to make all this money selling all these. And who? I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, who's buying that?
There's a market for it, you know. If there wasn't, nobody would do it. But there's not that big of a market. And then you wind up with, you know, I hate the term, but throwaway animals. You know, what are you going to do with those animals? You know, the 75% jungle, coastal, diamond, brittles, Queensland something. You know, where are those going to go? Yeah, if somebody wants it for a pet, but eventually, you know, we all started with pets, and then we decided to breed.
Yep.
And what becomes of it, you decide to breed. You know, this become Lonesome George in your collection? Or do you like, well, let me go ahead and just stick with it, see what I'll get.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that the first two carpet pythons that I have that are pets, actually both turned out to be male, so I couldn't breed them anyway, but they're still here, and I've never attempted to breed them. They're not in any of my breeding projects. Basically, they've just stayed pets. They're taking up valuable space, though, but they've been with me for a while. So.
The thing with those are probably some of your best ambassadors. When you're able to go to a school or an elementary school or a nursery or even a snake show and be able to, hey, here, check out this carpet. Everybody thinks carpets are vicious and this and this and that. Boom. Generally, because it was a pet, you've held it and took care of it and actually interacted with a lot longer than you have some of your breeders.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, we don't have as much time to spend with our breeding animals as we did when we had three or four pet snakes. And
that's
they breed
true.
Better.
Yep.
Really, really docile. I mean,
have
jungle
you,
is a lot here.
Yeah. Have you noticed, speaking of that, with the education and all and getting the word, have you noticed an increase in the interest in carpet pythons?
I see a little bit. I think I would have to actually do more, I guess, outside of my local area. I did. I actually did one of the Repticons in Enos, Texas, and they hooked me in for doing a carpet talk. I did four of them, two Saturday, two Sunday. I was about done by Sunday, and I packaged a bunch of these baby carpets and stuff to take because I figured, okay, this will, you know, kind of. I sold one. But granted,
wow.
You know, this particular show there was. Music festival in Austin, there was a mud ball going on in Enos, there was a race going on in Enos, there was reptiles and amphibians of Tarrant County going on in Dallas. There was stuff going on all over the place that there wasn't the amount of traffic that they expected at that show. So had I probably had the amount of traffic, it may have been different.
Right.
But, I just did a show in Enos about 2 weeks ago. And I saw a lot more interest in carpets. And granted, it was a lot of people that came up because of the albino, but got to talking with them and, you know, explain what I do and, you know, hey, great animals, the crosses and stuff. I'm not knocking anybody's animals. They paid the money for it. Let them do what they want, you know. And I've seen some killer ones. It's just, I'm honest, it's not my thing. So
right.
Right. You know,
and got a lot of people that either contacted me since then or, you know, waiting to see what I produce this year, trying to get cage space so they can get, you know, another snake. So I'm starting to see a little bit of pickup, and, you know, I'm going to have to attribute some of it to the albino morph popping in. It's kind of the ambassador as far as getting it. Then now it's more of the education part, you know. There are all these different color morphs. They're different species, not just the albino. Whatever, you know, now this is the time for, you know, the peers to, you know, hey, this is why I do what I do. I don't knock anybody. I'm friends with Sean Christian. I'm friends with Eric, you know. But,
right.
Hey, you do what you do. You know, I don't knock it. And I will admit, dude, it's a nice-looking animal. That's a clean-looking animal. I like it. I may wind up getting one and putting it in a collection at some point, but I'm not going to probably pay your price, at least not now. Yeah, as a centerpiece.
Yep.
But, you know, as far as my breeding, because right now most of my stuff is focused for breeding in that space, that I can't have one of those just to look at. Even long before Nick got his Jag from Sean, I had planned on producing and sending him a Jag just so he'd have something in his collection to look at. And then Sean beat me to it.
That's awesome. All right, so that's cool to hear. I see a lot of people starting to get into carpets because when you take ball pythons, they're kind of, and I know you do ball pythons too, so you'll probably be you do breed ball pythons, right?
Yeah, I breed wide assortment. So yeah.
Okay, so I think the difference that what I've seen with people is that when you breed an albino to a pied, you're getting a ball python. When you breed, you know, a caramel to a granite, now you're talking about subspecies mixing. And I think people get confused and they don't understand all the stuff that's involved in the carpet complex, especially for newbies, you know. So I get a lot of questions about that kind of stuff.
I think that's where it comes in is it may be that's what hooks them into carpets, is that caramel granite, caramel zebra. But as they get to go in, I know you got some of the biggest hybridizers, all hairs, Sean Christian, but they also have their pure stock too.
Yep.
Yep.
Produce these other animals because there is monetary value and they're cool to look at. But I also know I still want to do pure animals. It's not being a hybridizer to be a hybridizer. And that's all
yes,
I do.
Right.
Still have that flip side. Because once you hybridize, you can't go back. As long as you still have pure stock, you can always make pure stock animals.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. When I started out putting my collection together, actually this happened last year. I was talking to Paul about getting some projects and stuff. And I wanted, you know, heads for certain things. However, like the head exanic that I was going to get or exanic, they had to be pure coastal because now I can start with – I can always go back, you know. I have that pure coastal. And, yeah, I can mix it to a zebra or I can mix it to, you know, an IJ or whatever I want to do. But at least for a base. I can always produce pure animals as well. So
yeah. But see, I think that's what you get. It's like I was telling Zach, I think, when you had, went MIA, that, you know, people pick up a carpet or they see one in a pet store and they pick it up. And that's, and a lot of times, like we've admitted, the jungles, it's that black and yellow that just strikes. It picks them up. It brings their attention, you know, and that's what we're hoping to take the coastals and IJs in the near future. But you get their attention, they get them, and they're like, okay, they're really cool. Now I do the research. And then once they do the research and then look into it, then it's like, oh, okay, well, this is – they got one or two choices. They either go pure or they go mixed. So, you know, then it doesn't matter what this original one was. But if I go pure, then this one winds up becoming the pet or – you know, the ambassador. This is the one that got me into it. And a lot of people still have that first one because that was their first one, their first pet one, and they just won't get rid of it. So
right.
It's unlike most of the other ones. You know, most of the time if I was going to look at a retic, I'm going to try to do the research prior to that because I want to know how big this sucker is going to get. What size cage am I going to need? Ball pythons, everybody knows. 41 quart. You're good to go. But when you go to the carpets, it seems like all the research is done after they acquire one. and not beforehand. And when you see the albino jag or whatever, there's still people that believe that all carpets are the same. The jungle is just a different color variation of a coastal, and so does IJ and the diamond, whatever. They're just different color variations, and that's not true. But that's what they see, because normally, you know, with the retics, it's like, well, I have a Madu Island and a Honey Island and a Cottawa Island and Super Dwarf and something else, where they breed all that other stuff into the smaller locale. So now you don't really have any pure discs or locale. You just have a smaller retic. So take size and go color. Now I have albino of whatever. It doesn't matter what it was. What's an albino burro going to look like? You know, they just look at it as that color and not, hey, that's a different subspecies or species, depending on which one you're talking about.
Right. Right, right, right. So I don't know if you hit on this. I'm curious to what do you have going on this year? Have you hatched out any carpets yet, or you waiting on clutches? Or
I'm waiting on a few. I have a few in the incubator. I have head-to-head granite IJs. Got 11 eggs, down to 5. Herman and Mocha Spitfire male IJ. His name is Shimino. Mm-hmm. Bred to one of my MPN IJs. And I got like 19 eggs, and I'm down to, I think, 5. Bad incubation. I really did, just going to seem like one of those bad years, I think, for me. I did Caramel Jag to my, you know, really clean Limpy line Jag female. I got 17 slugs and 4 eggs. I'm waiting on another jag to drop, and I think she's going to completely slug out. And then the last one would be my inlands. So I'm waiting on her. Outside of that, that was it for this year. Next year, there should be the Rockhamptons, there should be Brisbane's, more jags. You know, caramels, possible super caramels, red coastals, more straight MPN, Olympi line coastals, which I actually think there's a gentleman we all know off of Marilia. I'm not sure he wants his name out there yet, but wanting to buy that entire clutch. He's wanting particular lines of animals and wants to hold on to an entire clutch and pick out exactly what he wants. So... I'll probably have some more of those. And I'm still sitting on a couple of jags from last year, a few caramels, and just some really just plain coastals. Nicer coastals, some not. Some are just coastals, which you're going to get in every clutch. Being that it's a highly variable animal, you're going to have the stellar to the just average. But when you start with better looking adults, you're going to have less average or better and above better animals as far as the offspring goes.
I'm curious to ask this question. Was your season late this year?
Good question.
Actually, I think it was a little late, but not by too terribly much. Because I would have normally hatched. I've had IJs and stuff in April before and normally get the clutches in February. So, yeah, it is running a little late, and I don't know if that had something to do with the reason I'm getting the slugs, because it was early and things were just thrown off. And it's like I was touching with Zach, is, you know, like he was asking me, well, what do you think the problem was? My caramel jag was probably a little on the small side. I bred males at that size before and never had any issues. So I can't necessarily say it was that, but I've seen years where a lot of breeders in different parts of the country had a bad year. So there's other factors in play outside of just your male or your female. You know, temperature variations. We've had a really weird dude. One day last week we were 91, and the next day we were at 39. Oh, I mean, it's weather. It's warm and it's cold, and it's warm and it gets cold, and it's like I'm constantly taking a heater, you know, unplugging a heater and plugging in the, you know, the AC unit again, and then having to switch out. I'm ready for it to just be done and just leave the AC unit plugged in and not have to keep doing the heater. And it's been pretty wacky this year, and that may have had a lot to play with the reason the clutches are the way they are, as far as a lot of slugs or those that appeared fertile at first during incubation died off. You know, there's a lot of factors in there. So that's why I was telling him it's good that he got two slugs in the first clutch. So he knows, hey, it could have been worse. It could have been all slugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
That's true. What was the other question I was going to hit on? We talked about... oh, man, now I lost it. Darn it. I started getting into I believe that the outside weather definitely plays a factor, more so than we think, in our breeding. Because it's just odd that everybody around here is later. This is only my second year breeding, but I had eggs hatched out at this point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
We don't know, because when's the best time to throw your male in with a female? When is a cold front coming through? Or pressure stops.
Right.
So, you know, there's spells, you know, different people, different parts of the country. You know, Behoff being in Arizona now, he may have a really long dry spell and not a drop in barometric pressure, which will throw off his breeding.
Hmm.
I've actually heard of instances with people that breed boas. I'm trying to remember who this was now. But they cue in to that barometric pressure drop, and this female actually went ahead and gave birth about 2 weeks earlier than she was supposed to, and they all wound up dying because she cued into the barometric outside. So that cold front come through a little earlier. If it had come through another week later, they might have been all right. So there's a lot of play in there, you know, because we have these animals in a captivity in a country that they're not even found in. If it was like gray-banded kings and stuff, even in my area, it's a little humid for them, but general temperature swings and stuff, cool. You know, up north, you guys, pine snakes, I'm not sure corns even exist that far, black rats, stuff like that.
Yep.
Temperature swing stuff, they're used to it. They're you know, acclimated to that climate over centuries. You know, they're there. So we bring something from a southern hemisphere to a northern hemisphere, put them in a cage. And what generally means these guys have been in the northern hemisphere already, but, you know, saying you're having to do them, say bring something from South America and bringing it up, it takes almost 2 years for them to finally cue in and start to cycle to our northern hemisphere climate, seasons, and everything else, because their seasons is completely opposite. That's the reason when we're done hatching and getting ready to start thinking about next year's breeding, guys in Australia are just starting to breed and starting to get eggs out. Flip flop.
Now, again, I'm gonna rely on your ball python world expertise. Is it to the point now with the ball pythons? I've noticed that sometimes their season goes extra late, to where it's almost like they're finished breeding, and then it just picks up to the next breeding season. Is that a normal thing that happens?
I've noticed that, and I've talked to several different breeders, and it's like, well, did the season go late, or did she just go early?
Right.
And Nick, today, I think a lot of it has to be is, you know, how often can you stick to them? If you have just a slight drop in temperature, which is what triggers a lot of these, that's all you need. I mean, retics, you don't really have to cycle. Balls, apparently, you don't really have to cycle much. Just with carpets, there has to be a little bit of cycling, a little bit of light variation, a little bit of temperature fluctuation, but it doesn't have to be by much. You know, just the outside temperature drops, your room drops by at least a degree, degree and a half. Even if your heat tape is constant, never changes, the ambient temperature in the room drops. And that sometimes is all they need to know that that season is here, that, you know, fall and winter is coming, cool down period, and it cycles them. Even when people say, well, I didn't cycle my animals. You know, unless you have a big wall around facility and you got at least 5 foot and then have a separate wall and then you're sitting there where they're so isolated from the outside, then maybe. But I don't know if any of us got that much space.
That's valuable space right there.
You know,
especially in Philly, man.
Your stuff right there on there, on the wall, anything that has a window into the room, they cycle into that. When you go to winter, you have, what, 8 hours sunlight during the summer, 12, 13. They cue into that. I mean, Mother Nature instilled them with what to look for. So they know automatically without you even having to change. You can change the temperature, none. Don't ever alter it, but have a window in that room, and they cue into it because of the light.
Yep.
Even though you might have a light cage, they cue into that natural light.
Yeah, that's kind of going to be my approach next year. I don't think I'm going to cool as much. I think I'm going to flatline it a little more. And because I have a huge window in my rep room. And I'm just going to let that run, let the light cycles do it, and let the feeding cycles and see if that'll do it. But I only have one clutch plan next year, so I figure I might as well experiment with it a little bit.
Well, see, the thing with that, too, is window glass is a very poor insulator. So where your wall might insulate well and you don't have that temperature drop, you have it through the window. So that's what's
right.
Making it 3-4 degree difference in the room drop is through that window. And that's sometimes
right.
All they need.
Yep.
So, yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my idea.
There you go, Zach. Nice. I do have a question. Email came in the other day, and it's from Anthony Bross. He wanted to know if you had any tips or the best way to remove an eye cap that didn't come off during a shed.
Oh, I got one.
Let's see what you got, Zach.
Masking tape. I think
I've heard of
that. Tape is,
it does.
Fantastic.
It does work sometimes. I've actually ran into an instance, actually just at this last show, somebody was telling me about it, and it didn't work. The only thing, I tried the little Q-tip where you rub to, you know, seeing if there's an edge where you can get tweezers on, but most of the time, especially if it's a small one, you don't even want it. If you don't have a steady hand, you don't need to get tweezers near somebody's eye.
Yeah.
It does look like it's going to come off, and it doesn't look like it's going to affect, especially if it's just the first time, just going about business as normal. Feed them. Maybe put them an extra feed meal in so that it will cause them to go that little bit extra growth to shed again. Make sure they got plenty of fluid, plenty of fresh water, and mist them. You'll know for sure on that next one if it sheds out. And look for your eye caps.
Right. Yeah, it was kind of...
You could try everything. I know ball pythons are the worst because people will say they've got a stuck eye cap. And with ball pythons, if the humidity's not right in their cage, their eyes actually dimple. And people would think that the spectacle is still on. And it's not. It's their eyes. So they're sitting there, tweezers and masking tape or whatever.
Man.
It's eye. And there was no eye cap. It's just because it was dimple because the humidity was wrong. So I'm really, unless I can see... I hate to, like, really give out a whole lot of advice. Do this, because you may actually be doing more injury to the snake than, you know, that you expect to make sure that the eye cap is still there. Sometimes there'll be a little lip of shed still stuck on that outside, and you can tell it. So always, I mean, always make sure that it is. Check the shed. Okay, yes, it is a stuck eye cap. You can do the masking tape. You can do a wet pillowcase. Also works for when they're not have a bad shed. Get a wet pillowcase and let them just, you know, tie a knot in it and let them roam around in there. That wetness and humidity as they're rubbing across it will peel it all off.
That's yeah, a good one. I've never heard of that one.
That's one that I told them. The this is for a carpet. I believe it's for a carpet because I don't think he keeps anything but carpets. But, you know, I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking and I'm like, I don't think I've ever had a carpet shed bed. Have you?
Honestly, I don't think I have. I've had a green tree that shed bed one time. But as far as carpets, I don't think I've ever had a bed shed out of one. And,
no.
And especially a ICAP.
Me neither.
You know,
I never had one.
Or, you know, a couple of different rat snakes, maybe. But I don't think I've actually ever had a bed shed with my carpets at all.
Huh. And there goes myth about the humidity and all with carpets and, you know.
I'll pre-check to make sure that it is a stuck ICAP before you do more damage than good. No, I'm not trying to, you know, if it's a stuck ICAP, stuck ICAP. You know, I just be really make sure before you start to do more damage.
Absolutely. That's actually really good advice because, yeah, we definitely don't want anybody poking tweezers in the snake's eye. So.
But even at that, I mean, I don't think you'd want masking tape put on your eyeball and peeled off. I mean, that's...
yeah, that's... That's why I always waited out. I have a scrub that had a bad shed, and I mean, it looks bad, and I kind of feel bad for the scrub at the same time. But I always wait until that second shed go around. I do like you said. I feed them a little extra, try to push them to that next phase, and see if I can make sure that they have fresh water and try to figure out what made them shed bad to begin with, and try to fix it, and then you know usually. Everything that I've ever tried that second time around has always fixed it. So
the main thing with that with carpets or with any snake is to make sure that they have fresh water before they ever go in the shed or even show signs of it, because that whole blue milky that we always see in the eyes and tend to see a little bit under the skin, that's fluid they make so that it's easy for them to slide that whole skin off. And if they're out of water and they don't have any way to hydrate themselves, they can't make that fluid. Or they do, and it's just not as, I don't know, less viscous as it should be.
Right.
Right.
And it's more like glue. Yeah.
Slide off. It's more like used motor oil where it's really thick and it just doesn't slide like it's supposed to. And so then you can get stuck shed or you can get stuck eye caps. So it's always best to make sure that they got. And then if you have one that's having trouble shedding, which depending on what part of the country you know we live in, you're bound to have those. And just when you start seeing them go blue, mist the cage, mist them down. That extra moisture helps.
Absolutely. I have one more question that just came in before we jump off, but it's from David Kelly, and he says. While we were just talking about the topic of temperature, could you ask Michael, what is his thoughts on the Terry Phillip flat temp method? If you're not familiar with that, that's where, you know, Terry keeps his snakes at about 82 degrees and sort of just doesn't give them a hot spot, just leaves them at that ambient temp. Any thoughts?
Wow, I knew somebody put me on the spot about that. I don't know him very well, but I know it works for blood pythons. Carpets, honestly, I'm sorry, I wouldn't recommend it for carpets. I just wouldn't. I know the barkers do bloods that way, but you're talking about an animal that wallers down in the mud and keeps his head above it and waits for prey. So they're already in a cooler environment. Mud's always cooler. Carpets don't. They thermoregulate. They like to bask. They like the sun. So, yes, you may get a viable clutch. I mean, I haven't tried it, so I don't know. You might get a viable clutch, but I don't think you will get as strong or as many eggs in a clutch as you would. Because you can do corms. You don't have to hibernate corms and still get a clutch. We actually experimented with that. A buddy of mine through the Herb Club several years back. Hibernated some, didn't hibernate others, and you still get eclipses. The difference was you got more slugs and less eggs in a clutch of animals that were not cycled, whereas those that were cycled and hibernated had better fertility, stronger eggs, larger eggs. So, you know, I mean, if it worked for him, maybe that's just North Dakota weather, that it works up there for him. But as far as I know anywhere else, you know, hey, I mean, I'm not knocking it. If it works for him and he's getting animals, by all means, I don't see it.
What do you think is the, you were saying about the hot spot as far as getting the clutches. Do you think that they need that for, you know, like when they're creating follicles, or is it just, I'm trying to think of how to word it. Like, what is it about that hot spot that you think that they need in order to breed? Or is it the dip that you're looking at, the dip in temp?
Probably with follicles and the maturation of them. Because if you really look at the way they do, you will see a coastal, IJ, whatever, tend to roll over, either lay on their side or lay belly up. There's a reason for that. In nature,
right. Yep.
The sun. So they can bask under the sun and get the direct heat where it's needed on the eggs. So exactly what that heat is doing, I'm not sure, but they obviously need it. So, you know, if they're up in a tree, like jungles, they're going to kind of invert a little bit so they can absorb that extra heat. Those ones are going to be on the ground and might find a nice flat rock and don't have to do that whole inverted because they're absorbing the heat from the rock they're on. But if you're just in a scrubland, you know, grassland, you're going to belly up, absorb that heat from the sun. So that's why I always try to give them a hot spot, 88 to 90 degrees. During the winter when I cycle them, I drop that down to about 82, 84. And it's worked well for me. So, you know, like I said, with Terry's deal, if it's working well for him, hey, go for it.
Cool. Now, real quick, you're putting the hot spot at 88, 90. What's your ambient at? What do you keep in your ambient?
Anywhere from 77 to probably 82.
Okay. All right. That's, you know, it's so hard to put a recipe out there for snake breeding because there's so many factors other than just temperature, I think, that people often overlook. And you know, what works for you down in Texas and what works for us up here and works for Nick out in the, you know, I think it's all different. So I don't think, and it's, and I think it has to go with the room, too. I mean, you could have your room a certain way, and I could have my room a different way. And I think that's why it's so important to read your snakes and sort of have them figure out what they want and go from there.
Oh, so. And that's one thing I've said when I either talk to people and they either bought snakes from me or ask about the breeding and stuff. I say, look, this will work for me. You can try it.
Right.
It may not work for you because Nick's got a whole different setup in Washington. Whole different weather, whole different climate. You guys have a different climate.
Right.
He's in Arizona, for God's sake. I mean, so climate is going to be really different. I mean, there's not as much humidity there, so he's going to have to alter his cage setups or, you know, do misting, you know, ever so often some way to increase some humidity so it doesn't dry them out. I mean, his best bet would be sand boas. I mean, it'd be great.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's where he lives, so you make do with where you're at, and you just alter them, and sometimes it takes a year or two to figure out exactly what you need to do. I just know what temperatures work for me, so, you know, I may tell you, and you try it. Well, man, it didn't work for me at all. Well, yours may need to be warmer or cooler.
Right.
You know.
And I think it has to do with, too, just like you were saying earlier, with the room. Like, a lot of people think that they don't I've heard this before with ball pythons, is that, you know, people say that they, I don't drop temps, I don't change temps, and, you know, they breed. But what they're not taking into account is the fact that the room is actually dropping the temp. Even if it's just those 2 degrees and that's all it needs to kickstart, it is dropping in temp, and you're just, you're not dropping the temp. So that's
right.
Yeah.
Well, he does the same with Terry. I mean, does he have the radiant coral that goes? I mean, have you seen one of those that you can have concrete laid and have a radiant water coral that goes through the concrete? So it hooks to like a water heater, and it keeps that concrete at a certain temperature. It's normally done.
I would love to have that.
Now, if he has it in his room, and it's 82 right there on his concrete floor, and he's got fans blowing down, and it's keeping a constant 82, that's one thing. But if you're saying my cages and everything's 82, and 6 foot up on the wall, my AC or my heater is reading 82, what's it reading on the floor? Every time
right.
you open the door, coming from the outside, you're coming from another room, do you have a draft coming in? Are there any windows in the room? There's a lot of other factors in there that
right.
have, you know, looked at. So, you know, I don't know. I've never seen a setup. So, like I said, it works for him. Hey.
Gotcha. All right. So, I guess before we jump off here, what's your website, Facebook, all that stuff, Michael?
Facebook page is Python and Pear Tree. You can check it out on Facebook. I update that a lot easier. My actual web page is down and out. I can't even update it right now. Like I was telling Zach earlier, when I lost my hard drive late last year, I lost all my pictures, all my older animals. I'm going to see if I can get a friend that can go in and try to retrieve some of that stuff. But it also knocked out the program I had to update that website. So, yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm actually in talks with a friend that I'm very illiterate. So, trying to do that and, you know, upload a picture and change the page. Facebook, I can just take a picture of my cell phone, post it up, boom, there it is. So it was easier to update. So I want to incorporate Facebook setup, like on a day-to-day type blog, into my other website when it gets done, so that it kind of incorporates both of them together.
Gotcha.
Please also make sure you have audio camera and not this little cheap iPhone camera. So it actually has, you know, great megapixel, great contrast. So it actually shows what the animals look like.
Yeah, that's Zach's specialty right there, not mine.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. That makes such a huge difference. He came over and took some pictures. Woo!
I can go and take a picture, but you take a picture and you come in front of the computer and you download the computer and then you crop it or you adjust the color a little bit, or you tweak this, and you got to upload. Man, it's just too much work for me.
It is a lot of work.
Between, you know, family life and the snake business and actual real job that I work at. So, yeah, it gets to be a lot of work. So, but I'm slowly getting back to where I can have it. And if I can get something I can update more frequently myself, then it won't be much of an issue. So, we'll see.
Okay. All right. Well, it was great talking to you, Mike, and thanks for coming on the show again, and welcome back anytime, and, you know.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for all the advice. I appreciate it.
No problem. No problem. Hit me up when you got any questions, man. I'm sure you will when
it
comes to
life. No, I will. Believe me. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll be calling you up for sure.
All right. That'll work, man.
All right, Michael.
All right. Well, y'all have a nice evening.
You too.
Yep.
Thanks
you too, sir.
On.
All right.
Good night.
Bye.
Well, there we go. Another one in the books.
Yeah.
Definitely had a little bit of malfunction during the process.
A little bit.
You kept it going.
Wait a minute.
I think Owen pulled the plug or something. I don't know, man.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is. He's like, wait, IJ talk. Oh, pull the plug on you. Something.
Yeah. He didn't
I was like a deer in headlights. I was like, I know Eric had a lot of questions for you. I try to carry the day. We'll see. I'm going to listen back to it tomorrow, and I'm totally going to be kicking myself in the, in the head. But I tried, man. I don't know.
Good job. Yeah, I'll have to listen back, too. I'll let you know.
I'm sure
it was awesome.
Terrible.
Nah. Come on. It's about IJs, man. It can't be that bad. All right, let's see. I guess I'll go down the list. Well, first, let's start with you. Plug away, my friend.
Plug away? All right, I'll plug away. Dark Side Exotics, come on. You want an IJ in the future? Not right now. You want an IJ in the future? I'll be there. I promise you. And we got lots of things going on over here. And, I got my first clutch on the ground. So if anybody's interested in any Tiger Jags, it looks like I'll probably get out of this clutch and some Tigers and such. Hit me up if you're interested, if you've seen the parents and you want to be on some sort of waiting list. You could catch me at Dark Side Exotics on Facebook. I have a Facebook page, and it's two words, Dark Side, and then Exotics. If you put it one word, it'll put you to some weird thing, so don't do that. And don't do that. And that's it, man. You could contact me at ZachBaez@yahoo.com if you want to email me, if you don't want a Facebook, or if you don't have a Facebook. Which I don't know why you wouldn't, but I guess there's some people out there like that. And that's it, man.
All right. I have to play this for you. Oh, man, it's really low. Damn it. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
oh, and
I can't
he turned,
hear it.
He turned it down.
Oh,
man.
You damn light-siders, I'm telling you. That's what it is.
Sabotage. I think
B-hop.
Him and B-Hop are in the back of Morelia Python Studio somewhere pulling plugs and unplugging phone wires and whatnot. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, thanks for co-hosting. I always like the co-host there with me, and it just makes for a more entertaining show. Forget.
Yeah, I think I was a little starry-eyed, though. You know what I mean? Like Michael Pinnell, man, he's such a legend in my eyes. So he's like, I've heard that name forever, and finally to talk to him on the phone, I guess I was kind of, a little bit starry-eyed a bit. But no, thank you. I mean, it was cool to be able to talk to him and him to throw me some advice about my IJs and about projects I want to do. And he makes me want to buy more IJs, so that's always a good thing or a bad thing, however you see it. So yeah.
Good thing in my eye.
Good stuff, man.
Okay, so let's see. Usually Owen's the one that shoots down this list for me, but I'll do my best. Let's see. Okay, first at the top, we got Morelia Python Forums, www.moreliapythons.com. Definitely go over there and check out what's going on. You can see the picture of Molly Ringwald, which I've been out of the loop for a couple of days, so I didn't see that whole post that was going on over there. And like I said, that's what conjurers are for. To get animals like that. So there you go. Go over there, become a member, there's tons of info and great community over there when it comes to the world of carpet pythons and other Morelia. Definitely some good people over there. Let's see, what else do we have? Carpet Fest. Don't forget, May 18th, 3 o'clock. It's going to be the best time if you are getting into carpets or if you've been into carpets for a long time. It's good just to hang out, eat, and drink some brews with some fellow carpet python enthusiasts. And we have also some of the best Morelia Condro people come in to hang out with us because we're just that damn cool.
Yep.
So
pretty much.
And if you're not on the East Coast, you can definitely check out the West Coast. Their little shindig is on June 2nd. June 2nd, yeah. And you can go over to carpetfest.com, and all the info is over there with the dates, times, and how you can get in contact with people. Because I believe, I'm almost positive that they're doing the same event where they're going to do donations for Rico. So Carpet Python
cool.
community is coming together pretty strong for Mr. Walder. So looking forward to seeing what comes out of that. What else do we have? The ICAS. Definitely make sure you check out that event. That's another... I think there's like three events this year that's going to be pretty much the topper of the Moralia community. It's going to be, first you have the Carpet Fests, then you have the ICAS, and then you have Tinley Park in October. That's pretty much
all of them.
Yeah, me too. So definitely, you know, those events are pretty cool times if you're into carpets or Moralia. So ICAS, www.arboreal symposium.com. Our buddy, Buddy B, and Mark Spataro, and Barry is the guys that are I'm all tongue-tied because of this stupid computer. It's got me all messed up. I'm sorry. They're the guys over there that are running this event. And it's definitely going to be a different experience when it comes to reptile shows. So, yes, it's the tickets are not your normal reptile show event, but it's a three-day event, and it's definitely going to be a good time. And I think people are going to leave there. And there's going to be talking about this for till the next
Ever.
Year, and people are going to be disappointed that they didn't attend.
Yep.
And so definitely make sure you go over there and get your ticket, and it's going to be a good
yeah.
time.
You reminded me. I got to get my ticket.
Oh man!
I know. Is that terrible? You know. I swear, I gotta stop buying IGs, man. I need to buy a ticket. What the hell?
You gotta tell them eggs to hatch, man. Hatch.
Yeah, really?
Coastal for a ticket. So there you go with that. As far as what we have going on, MoraliaPythonRadio.com. Follow us on Facebook. Go over and like us. You can check us out on Blog Talk Radio. / Moralia Python Radio. If you become a follower of us, you will be able to see those secret shows that we sneak in every once in a while, and know exactly who we have coming on, and gives you little reminders to when the show is about to commence. I know Owen has Hamburg this upcoming weekend. So go check him out there, and his site, as everybody knows, is Rogue-Reptiles. I know he has a Facebook page under the same, Rogue Reptiles. You can go over to his site, and I don't know if he has any shows up after that, but I know he's going to be at Hamburg for sure. And I guess that's it. I know I'm forgetting somebody, but I'm going to go with that being it. Anything else you want to throw out there before we hop off? You can close it out. It's all
yeah.
for Zach. Go for it.
Oh, wow. Pressure. No, dark side is the best, and light side sucks. So if you know what's good for you, get some IJs. All right, that's it. We're out.